Is he a draw? Like, educate me. Tell me.
I hate that song on a regular basis, but I would listen to Nicole Kidman sing it.
It's tragic that it's not captured on film forever. But that's that.
There are aspects of this movie that he ruined for me.
It's bad. We don't need to listen to it. Don't even put a clip in.
Her vocal chops?
She sounded good.
Stellar. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Off to Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, we're talking all about The Prom, the movie, because it just came out, we just watched it, and we have a lot of thoughts.
Do we ever?
So before we jump into the movie, let's talk about our relationship with the musical, because we both saw it. We did an episode on the prom musical very early in this podcast, like episode 6 or 7. Also, we are dressed for the prom today.
Of course.
Just so that you know.
I'm in a strapless dress, so we'll see how long that lasts today.
We just wanted to talk about our relationship with the musical first before we gave our thoughts on the movie, just as a refresher to everybody how we felt about that musical. So, Steph.
So, I saw it more than two years ago now when it was in previews on Broadway. It was kind of, I'll give credit to my friend Alessandra. We were in New York together and she was on the TKTS app, saw this one, said, let's go see that. And I said, okay. And we bought our tickets on TKTS. We sat kind of like 8th row center and didn't really know what to expect, hadn't heard any of the music, had a very, very basic understanding of what the plot was, and had one of the best nights of theater ever. I think there is something to be said for going in fresh and not knowing anything, and I think that was a perfect example of it, seeing The Prom for the first time.
Yeah, so similar to you, Shar and I were in New York in December. We only saw this musical because you guys gave such rave reviews. I had been in New York October before you guys were there in November, and I had seen the poster starting to go up. Again, really knew nothing about this musical and walked out like having the best time ever. It was a musical that I think we had said in our previous episode was the surprise of 2018 for us. And I just think about that Tony performance and how much we loved it, and just like the heart of that show is so big, and the message behind it was so great. I went back and saw it a second time when I was in New York recently, just before it had closed on Broadway, and then we found out about this movie, and that this movie would be coming to Netflix, and directed by Ryan Murphy, and had a lot of star power in it, and there was a lot of kind of controversy when the original Broadway cast was not included in this movie cast, and I feel like everybody has their own opinions on that, but I think at the end of the day, the goal of this movie was to get as many eyes on it as possible, and the only way to do that was to cast some star power.
Well, I think it was really interesting because the casting of this was announced while the Broadway show was still running.
I think they had just announced that they were going to be closing, but yeah.
Yeah, so it was, the actors were having to do their show every night knowing that a movie was being made of this show that they developed, created, put their heart and soul into these characters, and knowing that they would not be playing these parts.
Yeah.
And I do think like the star power is a huge reason why maybe the movie was even greenlit in the first place, why they got the budget that they did. But yeah, it was an interesting time when this musical was still running on Broadway, and then we knew that it was going to exist in this different form with these different people.
Yeah, and also the fact that these Broadway actors, as you said, who had given many years to this show, I think the prom, like, entire process was 5 or 6 years with, like, out of towns and everything, but those actors would have had to audition like everybody else for this movie, and that seemed wrong, as you said, that they would be performing these roles 8 times a week.
Yeah, and this is such an interesting show because I feel like the characters themselves feel like Funhouse versions of the actors. So Dee Dee feels kind of like, if you looked through a weird kaleidoscope, feels like Beth Level, and
yeah,
Barry felt like this, you know, Funhouse mirror version of Brooke Stashmanskas, and they all kind of like Angie Schwerer and what's her name, Oh, the character's name is literally Angie, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's literally, like, it was based on her. And then, so there's so much of them, so much of these performers' DNA in these characters. And then to have other people play them, I don't know. It was just, like, a weird scenario. It is a weird scenario.
So what are your overall thoughts on this movie? We should mention that we watched this on Friday. It is now Sunday when we were recording this. We live chatted with Alessandra and Shara.
Of course.
So we all got our thoughts out. And I feel like we all kind of felt the same way. So your general thoughts on this movie?
I think the general thoughts is that this movie was fine.
No, I agree.
It was fine. It wasn't a huge disappointment for the most part. There were elements of it that were disappointing, but overall, I think it was a fairly faithful adaptation of the musical. I think for the most part, it kept the spirit of the musical. And it was an enjoyable watch.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things I'll nitpick and we'll definitely get into them. But overall, I was like, you know, it wasn't a waste of 2 hours.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think that it was exactly what I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
To think of the people that were cast in this movie, I'm like, well, you gave us exactly what I thought that you would give us. So I guess in that sense, I can't be disappointed because it is exactly what I thought. And as you said, I do think that the stage two film adaptation aspect of it is very well done. It's very, very true to the musical, minus, again, stuff that we will talk about was cut a little bit later in this episode. But in terms of, like, scripting and choreography and movement in general, it was very, very true to the musical. And I think that's also thanks to Bob Martin worked on this movie, who was the book writer, Chad Beglin, Matthew Sklar, who wrote music and lyrics, Casey Nicola, who choreographed. They were all a part of this. And I do think that we do need to give Ryan Murphy some credit there for keeping that creative team together for this movie.
Mm-hmm. I agree. In terms of adaptation, I mean, the things that were cut, I was, like, pretty upset about certain things that were cut. So let's talk about my most angry moment while watching the prom. The acceptance song. Watching that on stage was truly a highlight of that night in the theater. And it was just so high comedy, so absurd. And then for them to cut away from it in the movie, I was so upset. And I understand the story choice and it, like, makes sense, but because I knew what we could get and then that we didn't get it, it was such a disappointment to me, like, truly upsetting to me.
Also, they literally set the scene at a monster truck rally.
That
and
budget.
They were there for maybe 2 minutes. It was like, Trent was about to introduce Dee Dee to sing her part in the acceptance song, and then the song is over. It's like,
and it just smash cut to them after the performance saying, this is the worst thing that ever happened. I was
like,
I wanted to see it. I wanted to see how bad it could have been.
Yeah.
And I think that song is so funny. I think it's written so well in that the lyrics take themselves so seriously but are absurd. And I wanted to see Meryl Streep sing those songs. I wanted to hear Bigotry's Not Big of Me and It's Not Big of You.
We also needed to see, I mean, we did get to see them, but we didn't see them in this moment, the non-equity cast of Godspell performing in the background.
We needed to see the We're All Lesbians t-shirts. Where
yes.
were they?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
That was a merchandising moment. That was a merchandising moment.
That was a pop socket moment. Remember that?
Yes.
That?
Yeah. The merch. They had, like, little pins. They had so much We're All Lesbians merchandise.
Yeah, that's true. I totally forgot about that. That's such a missed opportunity. Also, like, a missed opportunity for some 2020 merch that say that now.
Yes.
Like, get on that. No, I totally agree. Even though, obviously, like, they didn't have this set in a monster truck rally on stage, what they did do on stage was so amazing. And we had talked about in our previous episode with, like, the giant lights to mimic, like, what it looked like there. And it was just, like, the most fun number. And I do think that we need to give, like, all of the credit in the world to Christopher Sieber for making that number what it
yes.
is. We'll talk about Andrew Rannells, like, when we talk about people, but I do think yeah, what a missed opportunity to get rid of the acceptance song. And, like, give us the worst part of the acceptance song, because that's really all that they gave us was the very beginning. And as you said, like, Dee Dee's part is great. Like, yes, Barry's part so is funny. Really funny.
It's so just funny how seriously they take it, you know? Yeah. Because they are truly performing the song about acceptance. And I want to see them. I want to see Meryl Streep sing those, you know, lines about acorns and bees and I don't know. It is on the soundtrack to the movie. Like, they did record the full song, and I wonder if there is a version of this filmed somewhere, you know,
like maybe an extended, like,
maybe not all the special effects are in or something, but I'd be interested to see it, because yeah, I love that moment of the musical so much.
When we were watching this, we were kind of all like a minute or two off of each other's streams, and you guys just jumped in on the group chat and were like, I'm pissed. What? WTF? I'm like, what is happening?
This is a disgrace, is I think my words. A disgrace.
Yeah, like, because it's such an early song and it sort of like sets the tone for how those actors are, it's kind of it is a huge disappointment that the people that haven't seen the musical never got to experience that.
They'll never get to experience it. They will never get to experience it. It was one of my favorite moments. I don't know. I laughed so, so hard in the theater. And yeah, it's tragic that it's not captured on film forever. But that's that.
Another song that was cut that I love. I know that you guys don't really care. But I Just Want to Dance With You. They really, like, just got rid of the entire Emma big moment at the end. And maybe that's because Jo Ellen Pellman couldn't hit the notes the same way that Caitlin Kinnunen would. So please enjoy Caitlin singing this moment of Dance With You. All it takes is you and me. And a song. I actually did like the way that they did that scene, and to see Emma and Alyssa in love, because you don't really get to see that throughout the rest of this movie, in my opinion, until sort of the end. But I don't know, I think that's a case of, like, I'm so attached to the original cast recording that to not hear it the way that it's done is a disappointment to me.
I think there is a lot of that we are super attached to the original material, so any changes they made would be like, why would they do that? It was perfect the way it was.
Yeah.
But I do feel cutting that end part of Dance With You, and then even the Emma Alyssa part of You Happened being cut out, it's like those were the moments where we got to see Emma and Alyssa be together, be in love, and that's so missing from this movie. So the stakes aren't as much there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we haven't seen these two characters who are the central relationship of the show, you know, the second that end part of You Happened, where they're kind of promposing to each other but in secret, I think is so important to the show, to the journey of Emma and Alyssa, and that they're so excited to go to prom together and, like, be public about it.
Yeah.
And then, so you really know what you're missing out on when Alyssa kind of bails or isn't able to be with Emma in that moment. And by cutting that, I feel like you cut a lot of the emotion tied up in Emma and Alyssa being together, in my opinion, anyway.
No, it's interesting because in this specific cut of You Happen, they do have them sing like half of their little bridge part, and then it's just like abrupt end. And I felt that the cuts that happened were all kind of abrupt ends, and I don't really know why they decided to go that way.
It was very early in the movie, and I just felt every time we were getting to an exciting moment of a song, anytime the song was really building up to, like, high emotion, they'd, like, smash cut to another scene or jump to another moment. And it's like, I was just getting excited about that. I was just getting into it. Why aren't we staying with that emotional moment? Why are we moving on to something else so quickly?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I also think, as you said about the Emma and Alyssa relationship moment, and that was, like, sort of the building point for them to, like, be okay with going to prom with each other, because the prom is now back on. We have not given a synopsis here. So, like, backstory a little bit. Prom was canceled because Emma is a lesbian. And
I don't want her to bring a date who is a woman.
Exactly. Alyssa's mother is the head of the PTA, and she does not know that her daughter is also a lesbian. So
it is Emma's date, literally.
And this is why all of the actors come to, like, solve this issue, et cetera, et cetera. But that is sort of why. So the prom is now back on, and they're, like, finally happy to go together. And then we get this, like, cute moment, and then it's taken away immediately. It gives you a taste of the emotions, and then it's like, oh, psych, sorry, like, you'll get this later at a different moment that you don't care about.
Yeah, I don't know if we got
it. Not with them.
The beginning half of the movie was so rushed, I felt. I felt we were just like going through it quickly. And for me, that's the most important part, because that is where you fall in love with the characters and fall in love with the relationships. And then the end part of the movie to me was super extended.
Yeah.
Unnecessarily.
Yeah.
And I was like, but we didn't get to be invested in the characters so much at the beginning. So now the emotional payoff you want us to have is not happening. You know, you have to set it up to make it work at the end.
To be honest, I kind of expected this when we saw the poster for this movie. It's literally James Corden, Meryl Streep, Andrew Rannells, Nicole Kidman, and then Joellen Pellman and Ariana DeBose in the background. And that was such a criticism when those posters came out. The tweets that came out of that was like, this show is about these two girls. Basically, it's the heart. They are the heart of the story. Mm-hmm. And you're going to put them in the back. I'm not excited for this movie, is like what the general consensus was going in. And I think I had hoped that they didn't take that route, but unfortunately they did. And they chose to give emotional buildup moments to Barry, and it literally made zero sense to me. We'll talk about James Corden and his mother scenes a little bit later. You have the room to play and to do whatever you want in this movie and to make that story more, because you have more time, and you chose not to. And that was really disappointing to me.
One of our favorite characters when we saw the musical was Sheldon, who is their agent or PR person, or I don't know. And he's kind of off to the side. He is not a main character, but he always comes in with something funny or a quip or I don't know, something. And I really felt he spoke maybe two lines in this entire movie. I was really missing him.
And also, sorry, you casted Kevin Chamberlain, who is a really funny actor, also the star of the Ratatouille musical on TikTok. And you didn't do anything with him. Like, as we had said on our previous Prime episode, Josh Lehman was such a surprise for us. And even though he didn't have that many scripting lines, just his presence, he was always in the scenes with the four other actors. But and it didn't matter if he was speaking, he was always doing something. In this, like, literally nowhere to be found.
I do think that's, I don't know, maybe it's a stage to screen thing, because when you're watching something on stage, you have the whole stage. So everyone is always there and you can kind of look around and see what's funny. And so even when a scene was happening with Dee Dee and Barry, you know, Sheldon was just in the corner, like, doing something funny physically or...
Yeah.
I don't even know, like, throwing away one line. Whereas the movie, you know, they focused in on different characters at different times. So it cuts away the noise of everything around them. And I think part of the funny, to me anyway, of the musical was, like, the shading, the color, like, the outside things. Not just the main story, but the comments and the quips and the banter and the jokes. And I feel like a lot of that was missing from the movie. I feel like there was a lot of... just the dialogue that gave you insight into each of the characters that was cut. But I don't know why, because this movie was not short. And they cut all these songs. They didn't cut all the songs, but they cut like chunks of songs. So I was very interested in so many of the choices.
I mean, I feel like the reason that they did these things was because they had hired James Corden and Meryl Streep, and they needed to give them these big long scenes. That scene of them in the hotel room.
Oh, it was so long.
Unnecessary.
That was so long. Yeah, I agree.
So that's why I think like they taking out little chunks here and there like led up to that like what felt like a 20-minute scene that was totally unnecessary. It was really long. While we're on the track of performances, let's talk about some of these performances. Let's start with Keegan-Michael Key, because he was kind of like a standout for me.
He was good.
And I really loved his performance.
We Look to You. You know, it was an emotional as a moment because, you know, obviously we're going to the theater and we get to see him going to the theater. But I skipped that song and I think it was so long in this musical, in this movie. It was so long.
Yeah. I did like in this movie that he was cast younger than the principal was cast in the Broadway show. So he kind of had like a better relationship with the students, which I liked. But yeah, like he's so funny in real life and always on screen. So I really enjoyed seeing him there.
Just such an interesting choice to cast him as a romantic opposite to Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
Really odd. But actually, let's talk about Meryl Streep for a hot sec. I feel like she disappeared into this role. I thought Meryl Streep was iconic in this.
I agree. I was like, she was the one person that nailed this. Yeah. I think when you think of movie musicals, sometimes it's like, oh, you know, you're going to get the same usual people, which, like, don't get me wrong. We get the same usual people every single time.
And Meryl is one of the same usual people sometimes. Yeah, she was in Into the Woods. She was in Mamma Mia. You know, she's been around the movie musical situation, but I really felt she embodied Dee Dee. I really thought she was really good in this.
I would love to know, because I had seen a clip of an interview, like they did sort of a prom premiere on Netflix a few weeks ago, and she had talked about how she owes a lot to the Broadway original cast, and I would love to know if she had a conversation with Beth Lovell about this character.
You know, it's fun because Meryl Streep took over the role of Dee Dee for the movie, but Beth Lovell is playing Miranda Priestly in the upcoming Devil Wears Prada. So they kind of have these two characters, these two performers are playing the same character. So Meryl took this one from Beth, and then Beth is taking this other character from Meryl. And I believe they've had a conversation about it. I don't know them, but I believe that they've like talked about these characters and being able to learn from each other and take something from each other's roles. I am like less upset about Meryl Streep's casting. You know, I would have loved to see Beth Lovell do this, but I think it is, you know, if you're going to be replaced by someone, to be replaced by Meryl Streep,
exactly.
I'm cool with it. It's fine. Yeah.
And I will say, her vocal chops,
she's
stellar.
Good.
Stellar.
She's so good.
Yeah, like her It's Not About Me was awesome. Her Ladies Improving was awesome. She just like, exactly as you said, like she embodied Dee Dee in a way that was exciting to see that almost direct adaptation take place on film. It was exactly what I wanted for that character. And I, minus like a few of the, as we said, extra super long scenes, I am totally fine with her interpretation, and I thought that she also did an amazing job.
I also really like Nicole Kidman. I thought she was good in this too.
Which is like, it's interesting because we had said this in our previous Prom episode, but like Angie is kind of not really in this as much as the other characters. Mm-hmm. She has less to do. And yeah. I had felt that she kind of like disappeared in this movie until obviously Zaz came into play.
Zaz was good. Zaz was good.
I hate that song on a regular basis, but I would listen to Nicole Kidman sing it. There's no contest for a girl who has some razzmatazz. So call that bluff and strut your stuff. Like no chicken this hick town has. Instead of giving up, oh, give it some slack. Yeah, her relationship with Emma was really sweet and loving. And I just, like, Nicole Kidman is such a good actress. So it doesn't really surprise me that she did a good job on this. But I think it was good casting.
I think the character of Angie, I think I fully understood her watching this movie. She is someone who has always been in the ensemble, and something that we talk a lot about is like the theater community and the chosen family of theater. And I think when you're in an ensemble, there is such a camaraderie and like a lifting of each other up to get through 8 shows a week, you know, working really hard. And I think that's kind of what Angie brought to her relationship with Emma. You know, when you're down, you still have to do that 8 shows a week, and you lift each other up and help each other. And I thought the character of Angie helping Emma, you know, telling her how to give it Zaz, staying with her over the weekend, as they tell us, like, that shows you, like, the best parts of the theater community, like, being supportive of each other, being there for each other. Like, that is, you know, your chosen family. And I thought, like, I liked the character of Angie, I think, more in the movie than I understood her in the musical.
She was almost like humanized in this movie more so than the musical. I also feel like she disappears in the musical and you're like, she's just with them because she's on stage with them at all times, but she's really not saying that much. And I do agree that, yeah, the relationship was good and it brought more understanding to why she does the things that she does and why she is the way that she is. And I loved at the ending, which I loved in the musical, when she books Chicago, because it's just exciting.
Tina Louise has shingles. I don't know.
Yeah. So two performances that I feel, one we knew we would be disappointed by. The other was, we weren't sure. So let's talk about Andrew Rannells playing Trent in this movie. As we said, Christopher Sieber plays Trent on Broadway. And I think we both agreed that that part is written for him.
It was perfect. Even down to, you know, that he kept getting recognized as a sitcom dad. And Christopher Sieber was literally Mary-Kate and Ashley's sitcom dad. And I don't know, what was it? Two of a Kind? Who remembers?
Yeah.
But the show that I definitely watched. And I think that it was just so specific to him. And Andrew Rannells, who is a performer that we love, like are huge fans of.
Yeah, we love, yeah.
I just think he was slightly miscast here. And I don't... I think I pinpointed it when we were texting the night of the show. Yeah. And I think it's... Andrew Rannells just has like a sarcastic energy, a sarcastic delivery of all his lines. Like everything is almost a joke, said in a joking tone or a winking tone. Whereas when we saw Christopher Sieber do it, and I think what the success of the character of Trent is that he takes everything he does so seriously and that he means everything so seriously.
Yeah.
And when he says, "That's what I learned at Juilliard," you believe...
He means it.
believe that. Whereas when Andrew Rannells said it, I almost felt like he was like kidding with it. And
yeah.
I think the comedy from that character comes from him not thinking he's being funny. And I think like that's was the disconnect between the character of Trent and Andrew Rannells for me.
My biggest issue with this casting was that he felt way too young. You're supposed to be a washed up actor. Andrew Rannells is the furthest thing from a washed up actor. And I feel like because like he didn't look any different than he does in his regular day life, that it was very hard to separate Andrew Rannells, the actor, playing Andrew Rannells, the actor, playing another character, if that makes sense. So to see him step into these shoes of someone that's supposed to have, like, a dying career, it just, like, was not believable for me at all.
I think casting is super important. That's why you have someone like a Meryl Streep playing Dee Dee Allen. She is a superstar actress playing a superstar actress. So it is a kind of a meta moment of it. And having someone who is, I think, currently successful play someone who was supposed to be previously successful didn't work.
Like, could this just be the Ryan Murphy effect if he's been in a couple of other of his shows and he wanted to continue? Probably. And I know that Andrew was a huge fan of the musical. I had read a couple interviews where he said that he had seen the show a couple times before this project was even brought to him. But yeah, it just like didn't hit the way that I wanted it to. And as we had said in our previous episode, that those Trent moments are the funniest moments of that entire musical. And I don't think I laughed out loud at any of his jokes once.
No, I know. What was your favorite one at the end after he's becomes the teacher, the drama teacher?
So in the musical, they do this whole number, Love Thy Neighbor, which Steph does not care for.
No.
And I mean, they do it in the movie too. And I actually think it worked pretty well in the movie.
There's one rule that trumps them all.
They talk about how the kids don't have like compassion or empathy or anything because there's no drama program at their school. So towards the end of the musical, they're like, you should be our drama teacher. And then there's like all of these fights with the PTA and the actors and blah, blah, blah. And out of nowhere, Christopher Sieber just says, class, settle down. And I was crying laughing when that moment happened.
It was
on stage.
So funny. It was really funny.
This guy, again, as you said, like, he took it so seriously. Like, when they said, be our teacher, he was like, you know what? I will be your teacher. And now I'm your teacher. Like, that's how I felt with the character Trent. And I didn't get any of that in this. I will say, though, I did appreciate that the Godspell cast was there and that they did have those moments to introduce them, because that was something that we had talked about in our Stephen Schwartz episode, that we would be disappointed if it wasn't. They were there. But yeah, even that stuff in the musical, like Trent's relationship with that cast is so funny, and we just don't get it here.
Yeah.
And that's probably like a timing thing, and they probably thought that that stuff wasn't super important to the movie, but those are the things that stood out to me, at least.
That was one of the like super insidery theater things, and I wonder if they were concerned that the super insidery theater things wouldn't translate as well to the movie with a larger audience, you know?
Yeah, that's
something
fair.
Like the Tony Award joke on stage killed the night we were there.
Oh my God.
Every time when she pulled out one Tony and then two Tonys, and then when Barry pulled out his Drama Desk Award, the audience lost their minds.
Which, like, I can guarantee that 90% of the people watching this Netflix movie have no idea what a Drama Desk Award is.
It didn't hit the same way, and also, like, without the laughter of the people around you, it just wasn't as funny. I don't know. Maybe this needed a laugh track. Maybe that's what it was missing.
Oh my God, a laugh track on this movie would have been tragic. But I do agree, we had said this when we were texting, that this show in particular thrives with an audience. Mm-hmm. And the night that I saw it the first time in December, it was Christmas time. Like, everyone was so into it and raring to go. Mm-hmm. And then the second time I saw it, there was actually a wedding that happened on stage after. So there was so much energy in the audience. And I mean, like, if you want to feel that energy, go and watch the last show bootleg, because it's just like mind blowing how much energy is in that audience, and that really helps the show, I think, like, come to life even more than it does on stage. And I agree, not having that for this movie takes away from it. I'd be interested to see it in a movie theater with, like, theater fans. That would be kind of fun.
I agree.
But yeah, on the flip side, to see it in a movie theater with people that are just there because of maybe the people that are in it, I don't know. It could also be a disaster. So it's like,
I think it's a movie that needs community, though. And I think, like, the Netflix model of distribution doesn't necessarily cater to this movie. And obviously we're in a different scenario. Like, we're not going to the movie theater now.
But this movie was always
supposed to be
Netflix.
Right. It's always supposed to be Netflix. But it is having a limited release, because I think they're trying to push it for awards or something, but
and they needed an original song.
Yes, it needs to be like the first song in the credits to be eligible.
I only listened to the Crown one, whatever it's called.
Yeah, Wear Your Crown. I don't know. Yeah. I only heard it in the end credits, and then there's just a random James Corden solo.
I know. I saw that, didn't and I need. Immediately turned it off.
I listened to the whole thing. I watched the whole credits.
However, in my opinion, that song does not match with the rest of the tone of the movie.
Who even wrote it? I don't know. I'll look it up. I don't know who wrote it. Yeah. It's bad. We don't need to listen to it. Don't even put a clip in.
No.
Another moment where I was really missing the audience was the ladies improving, to be honest. That was, for me, that moment in the show, you know, Dee Dee comes to apologize to the principal and then leaves and then comes back as her character in Swallow the Moon or whatever that musical is called. And
there was a lot of Swallow the Moon references in this movie.
This fake musical. Love it. But she comes out and sings The Lady's Improving. And that moment in the musical to me is recreating this moment for the principal to remind him how he felt when he saw it on stage. And I think it works so well, because while she's reminding him how he felt, you sitting in the audience are also feeling that way. They wrote this standard, generic, great diva number that suited her current scenario, but also that musical. And they had the audience experience what it would be like to hear, because they are experiencing that. And I feel like it was kind of lost in movie form. I think Meryl sounded great on it. The production of it was fine. I liked flashing it to her on stage, to her in the room. But it just, like, didn't have the same impact as being in the room with it. And I think because it's literally a song about, or a moment about, how exciting it is to be in the room.
Yeah.
Hearing it. And then we weren't in the room. I don't know. That's like my muddled feelings on that song. So I'm begging you, sir.
The read on the principal character was also different in the movie than it was on stage. Like, when she sings it to him on stage, he's so excited for that moment. At first, he's pretending that he's not interested, he's like, but by the end, he's, like, obsessed because...
Cheers.
Yeah, he's, like, cheering with the audience, and we're all losing our minds, and so is he. And I feel like it wasn't played that way, and maybe it's because there was nothing to feed off of
in that sense. It's just a different scenario when you're in a room alone. It doesn't make sense to... You don't have that relationship with the audience the way you do when you're in a theater. And, like, I just think part of this is, like, I personally am so attached to, like, the emotions that I felt seeing it for the first time in a theater. So watching the movie, it's like, this is fine, but it's not getting me even close to how I felt sitting in that theater with everyone, like, the rest of the audience and the people on stage. So how could it be anything but a disappointment? I don't know.
I know. Well, speaking of disappointment and not feeling emotional, let's talk about James Corden.
Do we have to?
Actually, I need to quote, because at the beginning of the movie, they're talking about how these characters are narcissists, and that's the reason that Eleanor, the musical, opens and closes on the same day, and they're, like, sitting in a bar and whatever, and Barry says to Dee Dee, "You're just not likable." And me being like, "James Corden, you're just not likable." So when he got cast, I think I felt the exact same way. Guys, please stop casting James Corden in these movie musicals, because it's not working. It's just not. And am I going to go as far as that he ruined this movie for me? No. But there are aspects of this movie that he ruined for me. And one of those things was whatever voice he was putting on was not cool and awful.
Yes. I was saying, like, it was hard to... Well, it's not hard to pinpoint, but it also is hard to pinpoint what the problem was with James Corden's performance. But I think a lot of it is coming down to the quote-unquote gay man voice he was putting on throughout this musical. And, you know, it's been a while since I saw it on stage, but I went and listened to the cast recording, and listening to Brooks Ashmanskas, he's not doing any sort of voice at all.
No.
At all. And I think a lot of his performance, like, Barry is a flamboyant character and flamboyant person, but I think a lot of it was in the physicality, but his voice was just, I don't want to say a normal voice, because everyone speaks in a million different ways, but James Corden's voice just felt very...
fake.
Yes. It felt very fake. It felt very, like...
stereotypical.
Stereotypical. Like, I've seen one representation of a gay man on television, and that's what I'm basing my entire performance on. And it just... it felt inauthentic.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I mean, there is discussion that he was using a voice to mask his accent, but I would have rather the accent and not the voice, to be honest. Like,
why not just be British? I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
Not his choice, but the huge problem with James Corden's performance was the voice.
When this movie was first screened a few weeks ago, the main critiques that came out of it was that his performance felt offensive. And that's an issue on a movie that is showing love in such a positive way and being such a big movement for the LGBTQ community. And to have that character feel offensive is just wrong. Like, that is not how Barry should be played.
A few weeks ago, I think we were talking about Ryan Murphy's choice to cast James Corden in this. And I said something like, well, he literally just did The Boys in the Band, where he made a point to cast 9 gay men to play these gay characters in this play because he felt it was important to have gay people telling their own stories.
Yeah.
And then for him in the same year to do this.
I know.
To make this choice. It just doesn't make sense to me as a casting choice. I like truly just don't understand the logic behind it. It doesn't even have to be Brooks Ashmanskas doing it. I would have loved to see him do it, but anybody else.
I mean, sorry, we had someone in this movie that could have played it. Kevin Chamberlain could have played Barry. He was cast in this movie. He is an openly gay man. He has an amazing voice. He's a Broadway actor. Like, he was there for you. Mm-hmm. And it's funny to me that, like, we talk about star power, and somehow James Corden name pops up in star power.
Is anyone going to a movie to see James Corden? Is he a draw? Is he a draw? Like, educate me. Tell me.
But, like, don't you think that he must be in some sense? Like, what is the reason that he keeps getting cast in all of these movies?
I don't, like, It's
like
wild.
He did one show on Broadway and
he was a West End guy, and like that's fine. I don't have a problem with him being a musical theater actor, but
it's like I have a problem everything aside, I actually don't think that his singing voice is that great either.
It's fine. It's like it's fine. It's mediocre. It's
you know who would have been good in this?
Who?
Nathan Lane.
Nathan Lane would have obviously nailed this. I think that would have been actually really fun because
like Nathan Lane across Meryl Streep, like
fantastic. And I think it would have made sense also because of him kind of like playing a version of himself, playing a caricature of himself, you know?
Yes.
And people recognize that in him. They know that about
and
him.
And he is someone that inside and outside of the theater world, like, you know who he is.
Yeah. That would have been a fun casting too. It was just so, really the casting of James Corden was such a questionable decision when it happened. And everyone said, this doesn't make sense. Like, it's not like they were shocked at the reviews or it's not like, whoa, I can't believe this happened. As soon as he was cast, everyone knew this.
Yeah.
And then we still went forward and did this. And then the expected result happened. And it's just kind of like, oh, why is this kind of disappointing performance at the center of a movie that we were so excited to have made?
Yeah. And I think for me, the biggest issue is that, voice aside, there was so much plot for Barry that did not need to be there. Let's talk about Barry and his mother. A sweet storyline, don't get me wrong. The fact that he was basically kicked out of his house at 16 years old for being gay and his parents never spoke to him again. But the buildup, just like...
Well, they introduced it and then resolved it really quickly. Like, it wasn't something that was threaded through the whole movie. It is something that, you know, Meryl Streep's or Dee Dee said in that hotel room scene.
Like, you should call your mother.
And then it happened. And I was like, oh. See, I didn't even like the inclusion of the plot line in general because, like I was saying with Angie, I think so much of this movie is about chosen family and finding people who will love and support you. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's your biological family. Like, I feel in the musical, anyway, like, Barry and Dee Dee were kind of each other's chosen family.
And Barry chooses Emma as his chosen family.
They became Emma's family and they became her support system. And she didn't have her parents supporting her anymore. But yeah. They found this family with each other, and I think the inclusion of like his mom's character coming back like undermined that message. And maybe that message wasn't intended in the movie, but that's like what I got from it in the musical. The idea of, you know, you have to surround yourself with people who will love and support you and care about you and lift you up, and not, I don't know.
And one of my favorite parts in the musical, and this is something that we have discussed on previous episodes, is the Barry and Emma relationship. And when she asked him to prom, I burst into tears.
That was the moment in the musical that really hit me. And it just, like, it happened slightly differently in the movie, and it didn't hit me in the same way.
Well, because they had no relationship. I didn't believe that he actually cared about her, if that makes sense. To me, the way that his character was portrayed was that he was there to, like, help, but also to revive his career. Mm-hmm. And that is, like, the complete opposite to how Brooks played that character, which I think is why I had, like, such a problem with Barry in this movie as a whole. Mm-hmm. I love Tonight Belongs to You. I think that the beginning of that scene in the musical is so sweet, so funny, so just like warm.
One thing's universal. Life's no dress rehearsal. So why not make some waves before it's through?
And in this, it was not. It was dull and it was boring. And it was like, I don't want you guys. I don't know. Like, I was saying this to you the other day. Like, I wanted her to ask Angie to prom because she was there for her. She was literally the only person that was there for her.
That was her bestie. Yeah.
It just like felt disingenuous to the actual storyline of the musical, in my opinion.
I also feel when you have a movie, you have access to more sets and cutting and editing, and having them be running through the mall, I feel, didn't work as well as having them just being in her bedroom having a conversation, which is what it was in the musical. And that's probably due to limitations of, you know, we can't have like a giant mall set in a musical, whereas, so it's in the bedroom. And you have different decisions in movies, but that intimacy, the fact that he was with her in her bedroom, in like your most private safe space, like trying to help her, added to their relationship, and then just shopping together didn't in the same way.
Having this conversation in your bedroom, like pouring your soul out, is just so much more rewarding. And yeah, so when he gets asked to prom, and I actually do think, like, let's give you one good moment here. I think Barry's Going to Prom was decent. I thought the little kid that played young James Corden was super cute. But
Successful adaptation moment.
Yeah, but the song to me didn't feel earned, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, thoughts on James Corden aside, let's talk about some of the things that we thought were really great in this movie. And one of those things is what I said at the beginning of this episode. The choreography was almost to the T.
Yeah, identical.
Perfect.
That choreography is so burned in my mind. Maybe because I've seen videos of it. Like, they performed at Macy's and the Tonys. But that choreography for Tonight Belongs to You and It's Time to Dance is burned into my brain.
I'm obsessed with the choreography in Tonight Belongs to You when the ensemble comes in, like, one at a time, and then they do the whole, like, feet action.
They're in, like,
I'm
V.
I'm obsessed.
Yes, I love it. It's so good, this, like, jazz funk. And it's classic Casey Nicola, but I think it's him at his best, personally. I truly love it. And watching the movie, it's like, oh, this is the choreography. This is what I, like, have such vivid memories of. And they didn't even, like, it was performed fantastically, but I was like, they didn't even punch it up. Like, this is, it was perfect as it was, in my opinion. And they translated it right to the movie, and I love that. Except for, in It's Time to Dance, there's, like, two counts of eight that I am, like, truly obsessed with for no reason. I love it so much. I taught it to myself. I do it when I do listen to the song, and they, like, cut that phrase down in the song, and my favorite move is cut. And I was like, I waited so long for this one move, and it was cut. Anyway, that's what I'm upset about today.
Yeah. It's funny because I do agree, like, those moments were, it was like, oh, we're getting this, like, joy and magic of the musical in these dance numbers. However, the way that they adapted this score, if you will, was so electronic and so synthesized. And I'm going to play for you right now a back-to-back of Tonight Belongs to You from the musical and Tonight Belongs to You from the movie. And it's basically that part that I just spoke of, the when the ensemble, like, really goes into that V and does that huge moment. There's something about, like, those huge horns in the musical. And I also think, like, obviously lighting is a huge thing. Like, there's strobe lights that are happening in that moment. But it just, like, didn't hit the same way, which didn't feel as exciting. And that's something that they totally could have translated onto film. I'm not 100% sure why they didn't. But in terms of the, like, underscoring, I really did like that in between scenes, they had almost, like, the next song play instrumentally.
I didn't even notice that.
Just, like, as a fan of the cast recording, appreciated. And I think that when we had watched this the other day and we're texting about it, when that overture hit at the beginning, like, it was emotional because it takes you back to that moment of being in the theater, and it's been so long since we've been in a theater.
It's like the first minute of Changing Lives on the cast recording is that overture, and I was just playing that first minute over and over
again.
And
then we skip the rest of
the
song.
Actually, I never listened to Changing Lives, so I never listened to the overture, but then I didn't realize that that's where it was on the cast recording. So I it's so much fun. I love that. I thought the costumes, like, production design wise, the movie looked
beautiful,
like, really great. Like, the clothes that Angie and Dee Dee were wearing, so Nicole Kidman and Meryl Streep were wearing, amazing. The jackets, the hats, the everything looked fantastic.
Yeah. Something that I wish that they kept was the whole premise of the storyline is the exact same with how they end up making this big prom that's inclusive for everybody. But I kind of wish that they kept there was like some lyric changes in It's Time to Dance. Like Barry says to Trent that he'll be a vision in aqua blue. And like he says that about himself. And also when
because the song, I think, was in the musical staged half at Emma's house and half at the prom versus it was all at the prom in the movie.
Which to me, it was so exciting when they all came out after like the ensemble. In their prom outfits.
The line that I missed the most was Barry saying to Dee Dee about a corset, I'm going to need some help with the laces. And she's like, I'll do you, you do me. But like, it wasn't in the movie. And I was like, that's the best part.
I also missed that line. And then because Barry's mother was at the prom, Barry says, like, they're all singing the I Just Want to Dance with You. Dee Dee sings it to the principal. Em and Alyssa sing it together. And Barry says it to his mom. But in the musical, he says it to, like, the hot gym teacher. And it's so it's funny. And that's, that's me nitpicking, obviously. No, of course.
But those were the things extra moments. Like, those are the fun things that take something from like being fine to being special is those like little moments of comedy, of heart, of emotion. And I just feel like that's what it was missing. It was missing just like something like intangible, like little extra things is what it was missing.
Remember when Ariana Grande was going to play Alyssa?
Yeah, I actually did forget that until right now. Awkwafina was supposed to play Sheldon. And then... I mean, the part of Sheldon was basically cut, so it was Kevin Chamberlain, but...
I wonder how... I just don't think Ariana Grande would have done... I don't know. She probably left because the character of Alyssa is basically nothing also, it seems.
She gets a full song. She gets Alyssa Green, you know?
Which, like, Ariana DeBose...
Yeah, Ariana DeBose was great.
Yeah, her costume's also awesome. Yes.
This was supposed to be the year of Ariana DeBose with The Prom and West Side Story were both supposed to come out this month, but West Side Story has obviously been delayed a year, so... I don't know. It's interesting. Now she gets 2 years of December promo, basically.
Yeah. And I do think that there was a lot of hate online for Jo Ellen Pellman as Emma. I thought that she did a good job with what the script allows. And I think she has a pretty voice. Like, she was fine for me.
Yeah, her voice was fine. I really don't have an opinion either way on her. It was fine. You know, we have a bunch of problems with this movie, obviously, but... I'm really happy that it was made. I'm happy that this has kind of been one of Ryan Murphy's big causes with his Netflix deal is to adapt theater for film and for television and to make it more accessible. And I'm glad that more and more people will get to see this story. I just wish it was better.
I think take us theater fans out of it. This is, if you are sort of somewhat interested in musicals, like this is a fun way to sort of get your feet wet and see if you can take any more musicals because it's fun. It's a storyline that I think is super important right now. And if there's a teen that sees this movie and feels seen by it, like, that is the reason that this movie was made, and that's the reason that it should be made. And as much as we can say that we don't understand the casting of James Corden, I do think that we do need to give Ryan Murphy some credit because he is such a champion of the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. And to make this movie be on a streaming service that is pretty accessible around the world, like, so many more people will get to see this story. And yeah, like, as I just said, if it helps one person, then it was worth it. But I also think, at the end of the day, it made me miss theater even more than I already do. And if you have stumbled across this episode to hear a review on The Prom movie, great. But also go listen to that original cast recording, because it needs to be heard. And just appreciate the magic that we felt in 2018.
I'll say it before and I'll say it again. I will never forget how I felt being in that theater that night. It was one of like my favorite theatrical experiences, seeing a musical, just how happy and excited I was. And when I listen to the cast recording, I'm like brought back to it. And I wish the movie brought me back as well. And it just like didn't quite get there.
Yeah, I'll be sticking to the original Broadway cast for recording sure. on this
one. We're not downloading anything. Maybe we'll download Zazz, you know?
That wraps up, I guess, our thoughts and feelings on The Prom movie. Let us know if you have seen The Prom movie, because we would love to know what you think of this adaptation. And with that being said, it is now time for our obsession of the week. Okay, Steph, what do you have?
Okay, so if you know me, you know I love podcasts. And one of my favorite podcasts to listen to is called How Did This Get Made? It's with Jason Manzoukas, Junae and Raphael, and Paul Scheer. And they did an episode in November about the movie Cats. So the concept of this podcast is they all watch a bad movie and then talk about how did this get made. And sometimes I feel like we're so in the theater community, we can't fathom people not knowing about Cats. And these people just truly had no concept of what Cats was going in. Like, zero idea.
Just to interject here, I don't know that I have really any concept of what happens in Cats.
No, like, less than that. Like, truly nothing. They were like, is this what it's like on stage? What is this? They were like, is this based on this? I don't even know. It was just so funny to hear them.
Another movie musical featuring James Corden.
Exactly. There's a tie-in. There's a theme, okay? Just try to hear them dissect Cats with absolutely zero background knowledge of Cats. Amazing. Was so funny to me. At one point, like, they got a comment saying that it's based on T.S. Eliot poems. They're like, no, it's not. Like, they truly knew nothing, and it's so funny. They had a lot of thoughts on the a lot of opinions or questions, if you will, about cat clothes and why are some of the cats wearing clothes and some of them not. So are the cats who are not wearing clothes, are they naked? Why did we have to see Idris Elba without his coat at the end? That was scarring. Why are some of the cats just wearing shoes and nothing else? Why is Rebel Wilson's cat character having like three different zip-up suits with multiple outfits underneath? Like, truly baffling decisions.
I feel like I had the same question about the cat clothes. It was very confusing. And then when like Rumpelteazer and the other one are wearing like chains, why?
Yeah. Weird, bizarre, unnecessary. Truly wild. They are scarred from their experience of watching Cats, as we still are a year later. And it just is like a fun listen. And if you saw Cats and you thought it was the highest comedy of the year, I think you would enjoy this podcast episode. So it's How Did This Get Made? It's an episode from November, and I would highly recommend it.
So my obsession this week is kind of like a two-parter obsession. So I am obsessed with the song Little Miss Perfect, which was written for the Write Out Loud musical contest. So for anybody that doesn't know, Write Out Loud was founded by Taylor Lauterman. And yes, I did look up his name, Steph, Ben Raula.
Oh.
And this is a competition that was created to give opportunities to help grow the next generation of musical theater composers. So obviously this year it went digital because this year is this year. And normally, if you are in this competition, you get to have a performance at 54 Below, which is super exciting.
That is fun.
So the song Little Miss Perfect was written for a musical based on 13 Reasons Why called Tapes. It seems like this has somewhat shifted gears, and the writer, whose name is Jorah Kwame, is now working on a Little Miss Perfect musical itself. I don't know if it has anything to do with 13 Reasons Why, but there is a concept album coming out in early 2021, so that's super exciting. But this song is so good. It is so well written. It has been a song that I've listened to for the last year off and on. It keeps coming up on my YouTube page, and it recently had like viral success on TikTok for no reason. Ooh. But that's, I feel like, why it keeps coming up. This song is about Courtney, who's a character in 13 Reasons Why, who is a queer girl, and she is like a straight A student. She's struggling to quite literally be Little Miss Perfect, and Taylor sings it so well. It's just such a fun song, and I just love that this writing competition exists, because to have a younger generation be recognized for their work is super important. And I love that she is the face of behind creating this competition to have these people be seen. So my obsession this week is Little Miss Perfect, written by Jorah Kwame from the Write Out Loud music contest.
I finally kiss her, but oh no, see a face in my window, then my brain starts to go, nah, 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 no, you can't risk falling off your throne, la, 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 love is something you don't even know, nah, 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 you can't risk falling off your throne, la, 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 love.
anytime someone is like a finalist or if they've won the competition, like different Broadway stars will perform it on their YouTube channel. So just like super fun. And also like, how exciting is that, that your work is like sung Being by sung. Some of the best?
That is so really cool. fun. That's a great opportunity.
Yeah. And before we wrap up this episode, we are using our small platform to highlight different charities and organizations. And in honor of the prom today, we are choosing Buddies in Bad Times, who is a theater company here in Toronto. And their mission is to empower artists, elevate queer voices, and inspire a better world. Obviously, they're not open right now due to the pandemic, but they are still continuing to support queer artists and queer stories online. So you can check out their website at buddiesinbadtimes.com. And if you want to donate to them, it's buddiesinbadtimes/support. And we will have this information on our social media as well. And that wraps up today's episode.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Off To Be Away Podcast with the number 2.
And you can listen to us anywhere you listen to podcasts. And we will see you guys next time for our final episode of 2020.
Ah, what a year.
What a year.
Bye.